From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 27th, 2022. The Brewers are spending this weekend in lovely St. Louis, and then they're off to Wrigley with the not-so-lovely Cubs. Today is National Fish and Chips Day, which conveniently falls on a Friday. This begs the question, whatever happened to Arthur Treacher's? An Amish man in Ohio was busted for drunk driving his horse and buggy. While defending his behavior, he threw his horse under the bus, which is a funny visual. He said he slept while the horse knew the way home, so it's the horse's fault. Luckily, he's Amish, so none of his friends and family will see him on the 6 o'clock news. Here we go again. A Canadian woman went to the ER with an upset stomach and came home with a baby. Just asking for every guy that's listening, how is this possible? A coffee bar in Florence, Italy is being sued for not displaying the price of a shot of espresso. So how much is a shot of espresso in Italy? It's 50 cents. 50 cents. You can't buy a straw at Starbucks for 50 cents. A North Korean historical institute declares it has discovered a unicorn lair belonging to the founder of the ancient kingdom of Korea. Unicorn sightings just might be the result of all those nuclear tests. A woman in Australia doesn't answer phone calls from people in numbers she doesn't know, and that's actually pretty good policy. Unless it's the lottery calling to tell you that you've won. She eventually answered with 2 days left before the lottery ticket expired, and she won $70,000. She's probably getting a bunch of unwanted phone calls now. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Titting.
Well, Max, we get Bigfoot hunters on TV here in the U.S. I wonder if North Korean reality TV is unicorn hunters. Maybe something that is a little less mythical is the market rally that we've seen recently. We're recording today's podcast a little before market close, but at least as of the noon hour on Friday, we're significantly positive, looking at almost plus 5% for the week across S&P, Dow, NASDAQ, running six consecutive days now in terms of up days for the S&P and the Dow. And I think, you know, clearly some signs that investors, after a significant period of profit taking, are now, you know, looking at some opportunities that are out there. Certainly don't want to suggest that the pain is over. Certainly don't want to suggest that nothing else bad can happen, because, you know, I think we're regularly surprised by the news that comes. But Dave, I think just from a, you know, a jumping off point for today's podcast, you know, you got to be pretty happy with the rally we've seen so far off of, you know, as of a week ago to the hour almost, entering bear market territory for the S&P. Well, now we've got a little bit of cover here.
Certainly, Kyle, and I appreciate your warning about not suggesting that this is certainly a long-term trend at this point, but you got to start somewhere, right, when you want to start off on a trend to recovery. I think what's really critical and what we've all been kind of waiting for is to see some stability in interest rates. You know, we've said many times on this program, and certainly if you've ever come to one of our seminars, that equity prices are truly all about earnings and interest rates. And you get into a scenario like this year where you have upward pressure on rates like we've seen, inflationary times, the Fed being hawkish, that it really introduces difficulty for stocks and tremendous uncertainty. So, you know, the 10-year peaked on May 9th at 3.1%. This week, we've seen some relief there. We're down to 2.7, like you said, as of noon today. And that's a good sign. We've seen mortgage rates now kind of take a little bit of a breather, coming down the 30-year from 5.3 to start the week to 5.1%. So, you know, again, not to suggest that this is a longer-term trend, but we had to start somewhere, and it's really, I think, offering support for equities right now to give investors, you know, a little bit of that reprieve from, oh my gosh, we're headed to wherever we're headed to with rates rising.
You know, Paige, maybe just throw the bond market to you. Dave touched on it, but we've seen some stability finally in bond prices. And I think in particular, while the Fed controls the short-term rates, you look at the intermediate or long-term, and I think it tells us something about our expectations for the future. So what are we learning from interest rates that have now stabilized, especially on the 10-year, below 3?
Yeah, I mean, looking at interest rates, there's lots of components to it, right? And they're not always going to be the same. And to Dave's point, the volatility in the interest rates has really been one of the angsty part of my experience, at least. But, you know, one thing that we saw today is inflation numbers came in. They were just about what we were expecting at 6.3% versus the 6.2%, but much lower than what we've seen in the last couple of months' readings. And so, you know, one of the things that we're looking at within the Treasury market is, you know, with that inflation slowing, the Treasury market is also pricing that in. So now it's showing that inflation may subside sometime in 2023. And even more importantly than that, you know, looking at the break-even rate for inflation on the 5 and the 10-year, that plunged over the last week. And so what that tells me, looking at the bond market and, you know, what the quote-unquote smart money is saying, is that inflation may not be as big of a concern as it was originally thought to be before. So it begs a lot of questions. Will the Fed continue to raise interest rates? I personally hope that they do. Yeah, it's no fun to see a negative bond portfolio, but longer term, the more planned out method of getting back to some normal rates, the better. And, you know, specifically this week, I tuned into a webinar from UWM from John Taylor. So for those of you who don't know, John Taylor is an economist who has worked, you know, since the 90s and wrote what's called the Taylor Rule, which is essentially how do you figure out what is the regular, normal, equalized rate for interest rates. And the big piece of that is GDP, so the output gap, and where we are from an inflation standpoint. And so with the volatile measures that we're seeing, it makes it a lot harder for the Federal Reserve to stick to some of these rules-based monetary policy, as he coined it. So my hope is that as we continue to work through this, as inflation starts to taper, the Fed holds their ground, sticks to what they've already said that they're going to do, or what they're going to do. And I think it would be a mistake to think otherwise, or a mistake for them to change course.
You know, I think the clarity from the Fed has been an important reason why rates were able to stabilize. I don't think investors are terribly concerned about what the path forward looks like because the Fed's been clear, this is what we're looking at, this is what we care about, and this is what we think will get us there. The other thing to remember, though, is that they are incredibly sensitive to what the result of these steps is, and they're going to be very sensitive to how the data changes over time. And so, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about, well, what if the Fed doesn't do enough or what if the Fed does too much? Of course, the reality is they haven't set a course that they can't deviate from. And so as the data comes in, I think we'll see the necessary changes. We'll see them, I think, react in the way we need to. You know, what I think is critical is inflation is a supply and demand issue. And demand is very much a function of expectation. And so, you know, you mentioned the break-even rate for Treasury inflation-protected securities. Well, understand that if we're starting to think that inflation might come down, in many ways that's self-fulfilling, that people don't rush out to buy stuff today on the fear it'll be more expensive tomorrow, because that just leads to more inflation. Instead, they're more willing to wait and space out those purchases. And Dave, the other side of this is the supply side. And, you know, we've been dealing with COVID now for quite a while. But, you know, I think especially recently, China's zero COVID policy has led to some pretty significant supply constraints, potentially seeing some resolve there.
Yeah, good news coming out of China a little bit this week. They're reopening some of their larger manufacturing hubs. Shanghai, in particular, has been hardest hit there with complete lockdowns. You know, just an anecdotal point here, just to give perspective to the depths of the shutdown and how it can affect the world economy. Tesla sold 65,000 vehicles in Shanghai alone, one city in China, in the month of March. They shut the city down in the month of April. They sold 1,500. So that's one company, one vehicle line in one city in China, and you can see that massive impact. So they're projecting right now that they're trying to get to a full reopening by mid-June, so that's only a few weeks away. And according to a report by CNBC, they're estimating about 80% of China's manufacturing is back online. So that those are good signs. It's not just not only for supply chain issues, but also for just global demand and being able to fulfill orders for U.S. companies across the board. So I think that's a positive, Kyle, and I think that could actually give us a little bit of tailwind as we go through the summer.
Joel, plenty of economic data this week. You know, we touched on the inflation piece, and there's probably more to add there, but, you know, what else stands out to you?
I think that's a big one. And again, hearken back to what you and Dave were mentioning is that in page two that, you know, none of these are long-term trends. So the report that we got today on Friday on personal spending, we don't necessarily know if that 1 month is going to be, how much it's going to be corrected in the next month's revisions and how it's going to go in months after this. But it was encouraging as far as inflation is concerned because it's showing that inflation is slowing down. The month-to-month increase in the PCE index that the Fed likes to watch to gauge inflation, that went up at its lowest increment since November of 2020. It was the first time since November 2020 that the year-to-year inflation rate didn't go up. It actually went down. It was 6.6% in March, which was the highest since 1982, and this time it's 6.3%. There were other things in that report that are encouraging for inflation. There were reports earlier this week from the Commerce Department on new houses and from the National Association of Realtors on pending contracts for houses. Both of those show that the housing industry is weakening. And the excuse that the realtors gave is mortgage rates. So you have to wonder whether or how much of an influence the Fed has had with raising interest rates. And now mortgage rates are going up. Dave mentioned 5%. And the realtors, because of that, say that now sales for houses this year are going to go down by 9% for the year. And to the inflation side of that, as the demand for those houses goes down, they're expecting that the inflation rate for housing pricing, which has been tremendous, that's going to also slow down. They're thinking that year to year, housing prices are going to go up maybe 5% this year, as opposed to it's about 15% right now. They also interesting on the mortgage rate front, they say, you know, they're predicting 9% lower sales this year at 5% mortgage rate. If it goes to 6%, they're thinking 15% cut in how many houses they sell.
And Joel, I think it's a very good point that you bring up that, you know, the Federal Reserve raising interest rates is having an impact not just on mortgage rates, but the amount of homes that are being bought. You all of a sudden, when you see housing prices go up the way that they had been, the B word starts to get thrown around. And, you know, I'm talking about the bubble word. And so suddenly you hear people say, oh, is there a housing market bubble? But this type of move tells me that it wasn't a bubble. It was just a supply and demand issue, much like everything else in economies and all the other things we were talking about. But the fact that the interest rates are putting a cap on demand is a good thing that shows the housing market is actually functioning the way that it's supposed to. Not to say that prices could not move in a different direction, but these are the types of relationships that we like to see play out in the markets.
The other thing about inflation is that we had a report today from the University of Michigan on their consumer sentiment. We know that consumer spending, makes up two-thirds of the GDP, and so sentiment is kind of a precursor to that, and sentiment's pretty low right now, and a lot of it is because of concerns about inflation. So there's that aspect of it, but there's also from these consumer surveys that the University of Michigan found that consumers actually, for their own personal finances, consumers are pretty confident that only a quarter of them think that they're going to be worse off a year from now. The majority of them think that they're going to be better off in 5 years. So if we can tamp down concerns about inflation, there's that pent-up demand to spend, and that's going to help the economy going forward.
I think what I appreciate about all this, and Joel and Paige, this speaks to your comments, I think, quite clearly, is that this is all working the way it's supposed to work. We went through a period of time at the start of this year where things were pretty uncertain. You got to kind of the start of the war with Ukraine. And I think there was a lot of volatility that didn't make a lot of sense. at least at the time. In hindsight, it all starts to kind of shake out into, okay, this has been by design. The Fed is now clear in what their actions are. Consumers are responding appropriately. The market and the economy are responding as appropriately as well. And so I think this is all a pretty healthy part of a normal economic cycle. And the one thing, you know, as we talk about the rally that took place this week, the one thing that hasn't come back as stocks have come back is speculation. What I think is critical, and Paige, you pointed it out, is so the S&P or the Dow or the NASDAQ, which largely baskets of pretty high quality stocks, have all had an incredible run this week. But Bitcoin or some of the things that last year people were throwing money at with the expectation that they'd only go up, they've still gone down this week. And so I think we're seeing investors starting to recognize what you buy matters.
Yeah, and you know, for those who listen to the podcast regularly and have heard me on it, you probably know that I'm not a huge fan of cryptocurrencies in general. I have a lot of concerns about them. And so, like you said, that speculative area has continued to fall. But we've also seen it in some speculative areas of the stock market. So in 2020, 21, we had a boom in what were called special purpose acquisition corps, or SPACs. Essentially, it was a shortcut for companies to IPO without going through, you know, the normal processes, working with investment banks, getting a valuation, finding the buyers and getting a price. And rather, it was a company that would say, we are collecting money to take a company public. And, you know, there was a huge boom in those over the last 2 years. But now already we're starting to see signs that maybe quick and easy isn't necessarily better, especially when it comes to companies, you know, getting on the public markets. So about 10% of those companies have already issued what they call going concern warnings, which means that they're not sure they're going to be able to meet their targets. They're not getting the cash flow that they anticipated. And just to put that into perspective, that's twice as many, or double the amount, relative to those that went through the traditional IPO market. You know, so again, just because a company is able to go through what's called a SPAC doesn't necessarily mean that it has the same growth potential that you would expect otherwise. It didn't have to go through necessarily the same due diligence processes. So again, just a reminder that just because something can be done fast and it can be done quickly without a lot of extra work involved, making it a little easier, doesn't make it a good investment necessarily. And so you have to be careful about making sure you're buying companies that have track records with, you know, proven cash flows rather than just what's exciting.
I think those words of caution are critical right now. You know, cautiously optimistic, obviously, about where we go from here, especially when you consider, I think, just how healthy the market response has been the past few weeks. We've seen the relationships that we're used to start to come back. And you know, candidly, I think a transition to summer will help with a lot of the volatility we had been seeing. You know, it's Memorial Day weekend. Everybody stay safe, stay healthy, enjoy the time outside. It's clear, you know, as you look out, maybe not today out over the lake, but certainly over the past couple of weeks, that signs of summer are coming. Seen cruise ships docked in the harbor here now, which has been a fun thing to see for the city. And I think they're talking about 10,000 cruise ship passengers potentially this summer season, which will be a big deal for Milwaukee and certainly, you know, I think a big sign of summer. Thanks for listening. As always, we enjoy doing the program for you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.